my neighbors. Tune in to Out There to meet some of them. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5 in the afternoon with me, Ruthie Woodring. Come with me and my recorder to meet people and plants and think about ways we can share the world. That's Out There every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, 103.3 FM, Northampton. Archived editions of Out There are online at weatherbeard.com/RUTHY. Get out if you can. But if you can't get out, tune in. And welcome to Out There. It's Wednesday, August 19th, 4:01 p.m. according to the studio clock. I'm here in the studio with Dwayne Rainey. Thanks for coming in, Dwayne.
Indeed. Just hearing David Pacman, bulls killed seven people in Spain. Go Bulls. I mean, they get stuck, and how many of them get killed? Mm-hmm. What if it was just like one really tough bull that killed all seven of them? I mean, would they let that bull in the ring, or would they put it back out to pasture?
I don't know about these things.
Go Bulls.
Well, all right. During the next hour, you'll hear from the Agile Rascals Theater Troupe and from Julia Reisman of the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways and from Ben Ross following up on the efforts of CSO workers to get fair treatment.
Go Ben.
So the Agile Rascal Theater Troupe, they're performing tonight at the Hungry Ghost on State Street in downtown Northampton.
Pizza, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's tonight, Wednesday at 8 p.m. The show will last like maybe an hour and 15 minutes, and it's family friendly.
Do they have lighting?
I guess if you can stay up late. Do they have lighting? Yes, they have lights.
Not from Cheerios.
I don't know. It's probably, maybe it's their bike lights. I think they're traveling with lights as part of the set.
Shadow puppets?
I can't say, but I can say that the theater troupe has been bicycling across the country doing shows. And they left California several months ago, and they're almost to, I think, their final show in Eastern Mass. So I found out about them because they contacted my household through the Warm Showers list. Warmshowers.org, it's a hospitality network for traveling cyclists. And since they're staying where I live, I figured they were easy targets for an interview.
Easy prey. I don't have to travel far. You got a minute? No. All night?
I interviewed Dara Silverman and Jenny Hipscher. The other members of the troupe are Allison Finner, Lelia Johnson, Ren Dodge, Alexis Camille, and John Paul Olson. I'm just going to play the interview.
What is the Agile Rascal Theater? Who are you? Where are you coming from? What are you doing? Why are you doing this?
We're a group of seven artists, performers who got together in the Bay Area and decided to bike a play across the country. Dara Silverman.
Hi.
It started with an idea of hers to do this, and she put out a call. Mm-hmm. And we're the ones who answered.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to do this biking theater?
I guess I was trying to combine two things that I love. I had just graduated from grad school with a degree in playwriting that I didn't quite know what to do with, and had also been like increasing my miles on the bike and kind of falling in love with pushing myself to do longer and longer miles and longer and longer days and then longer and longer multiple days. And I was sort of just like looking for something big to do in my life. I was envious of all these people doing cool collective art projects and had this moment where I kind of thought to myself, like, oh, I want somebody to invite me to do a cool thing. Mm-hmm. And then, like, as that thought was happening, the thoughts all kind of, like, tumbled forward, like, well, if that doesn't happen, like, you have to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And then, like, well, what would that even be? And then, like, instantly it was, like, bike a play across the country. Like, I just, it was just, like, it was there waiting for me to discover.
And why did you come?
Dara and I have been friends for years. So I was also at a point, like, I had been living in New Mexico, and I had been living there for, like, 10 years, and I was like, I need to get out of here and, like, connect with what is happening in theater and also just like politically and socially. It was just feeling like it was time to like open myself up to what was happening in other places and be more available. I was actually right around here over at Double Edge for the in the fall. So we met up at Thanksgiving and she was like, I got this first crack at the script and there's this part I really want you to play and it's a sea creature and it just like all the things I'd been thinking about were like travel and community and art. I was like, oh man, I kind of have to do this.
Is the theater part and the biking part like two separate things, or how are they integrated?
They're definitely integrated. I wish they were more integrated. Sometimes it can feel very much like we bike for an entire week straight, and then we show up in a town, and it's like, wait, what are we doing? Oh yeah, we've got this play, and then we're doing the play, and then we are in that world for a second, and then we wake up the next day, and we're like, oh, we have to get on our bikes again. Sometimes it can feel a little bit more separate. When we started thinking about the ideas that we wanted to explore in the play, we started with the ideas of exploring the intersection of technology, capitalism, and spirituality. It's hard to know what a trip like this is going to make you think about or what it's going to make you confront. But there were certain things like, you know, the landscape, the changing landscape, the economy, the, you know, and when I say the changing landscape, I mean like with climate change and with the way that, I don't want to say, capitalist tendencies are sort of making these sort of like monocultures of this, of the landscape and the way that Walmart is, you know, the way that these like big businesses are sort of ravaging the land.
Can you say a little bit what the play is about that might make people excited to come tonight?
There's this total drought in California, and there's like fires, and there's a mandatory evacuation, and then a migration from the West Coast, and the drought is like the whole West Coast to east. And then there's this like idea that there's this sort of shifting line of civilization that keeps pushing and shifting east. But then the play actually just takes place at a gas station in the desert southwest, where there's a gas station attendant who has been stationed there. His company, Gasless, has stationed him there for the migration specifically. Mm-hmm. And so he's very loyal to this company. And so he's there. And then the migration has also left child behind. And then there's the scientist who rolls through, and she's got a specimen in the back of her car, and it's very important for her to get to the East Coast. But they all wind up there together, and then some travelers come through, and they're actually heading the other way. And so this all creates these tensions, and then there's some animals too.
You're a deep sea creature, is that what you are?
I am a deep sea creature. I'm like a little microbial creature that metabolizes all the plastic that has settled down in the ocean floor and is like adapting and evolving with this plastic, eating it and metabolizing it, and it's becoming part of me.
The play is at 8 o'clock tonight at the Hungry Ghost.
Play is at 8 o'clock tonight, Hungry Ghost. It's free, it's by donation, and it's kid friendly, and it probably runs about an hour and 15 minutes.
I heard that your bicycles, some of one or more of them, are turned into cars.
Yeah, that's true. I think sometimes people say to us, well, there's no bikes in the play. Well, that's true. We're kind of creating this alternative sort of dystopian landscape where everybody drives cars. The dystopian world is a world without bicycles, so the bikes are sort of subtly implied kind of like on the outskirts of this play, so as not to be too didactic about, you know, like, don't drive your car, get on your bike, and we'll be able to save the environment. I think it's important to us to be really exploratory in the play itself, and then whatever like lessons and messages come out of both the combination of the play and the way that we're traveling are sort of up for interpretation.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I think a lot of people, sometimes when they see their poster or flyer, they hear about the play, they are expecting, like, this bike theater to come in and be like, ride your bikes, like, recycle, stop doing what you're doing and how you're living your life now. For us, it was and it is, like, this sort of experiment. So, like, how can you even make a play with these themes that seem really, really huge without being didactic or like, needing to have some answers and stuff, too. So.
What parts of your journey coming from California have contributed, like, a sense of meaning and purpose and, like, empowerment and doing this whole process?
I mean, I think early on, we started out and everything happened very, very quickly, like, how we came together in the end, and then we, like, took off. And there were so many things interpersonally that we just didn't get to do, and we didn't really get to know each other or, like, establish ways we were going to travel together and all that stuff. And so in the first couple weeks and continually, things came up around, like, trust and how we travel, and also, like, privilege, like, class, race, gender dynamics, all these things. And so, and it kind of, like, it exploded very quickly in the beginning. And so we had to, like, kind of headlong address some things. And I think for me, there was a point in that where it was really hard, and we didn't know really what we were doing with it, but something about just knowing that all the dynamics that we had that are present in our lives and in our culture, I think there was some part of maybe all this that thought, like, oh, you just, like, you take yourself out of that and mm-hmm. get on your own, you just create something mm-hmm. new, you just do. Uh-huh. But actually realizing that, oh no, that we take all that with us. And then by removing yourself and putting yourself, that gives you the opportunity to look at those things and create something new, because you see that you're recreating those things, but you have to be really active in that. And for me, that was one of the points when I thought, like, this is important work, because this is kind of how, this is how we do it, right? We do it, like, in our everyday lives. If not there, then it's very hard to do it on this, in this huge way.
I mean, that was so beautifully said. I almost kind of want to just, like, say that was enough. But I do have another. Which is that if I wanted to pump us up, I could say, like, well, we do interact with people all the time that come to our shows or who we meet at gas stations and places that we stop, and they say, like, that's so cool what you're doing. I want to do something like that. And that always feels good, but I wouldn't go so far as to say, like, this is important work. And I mean, I'm glad that we're inspiring people to think creatively about what weird things they can think of and decide to do, I guess, unless they decide to do something that's, like, different and harmful. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really know how we are going to affect people. You can't really control that. I guess what I'm saying is I don't really feel like it's our place to say whether it's important work or not in any kind of grand scheme, but I would agree with Jenny that it does resonate in a personal way, and at this point we're still so inside of it that I feel like I've been given enough material and muck and personal work and things that I've bumped up against about myself and the way that I interact with other people, that I'm going to be kind of, like, thinking about it and moving through it and using that for a long time after this, and I can only hope that, you know, I've started to think at this point that maybe there's actually one more iteration of the play script, which is not something that I had anticipated before, but that all of these things, these interpersonal dynamics that are happening, all these relationships and the way that they kind of smash into each other, that there's actually a way to weave that in more deeply into the script. And that then maybe the project will be done. Because at this point right now, all it is it's all these, like, feelings and thoughts. But, I mean, at least as an artist, for me, the way that I kind of, like, process and move through that stuff is usually, like, through art and writing. And so, and because it's all sort of contained within this thing of this Agile Rascal project, it seems like it only makes sense to have these new thoughts that have come up from this project, from this trip, be written into the world of the play as well.
I'm going to interrupt this interview for just a minute and tell you that you're listening to Out There. I'm doing an interview with It's with Jenny and Dara from the Agile Rascal Theater Troupe that are performing at the Hungry Ghost this evening at 8.
Hello. Yeah, you're listening to WXOJ 103.3 FM, Valley Free Radio. Have me shut off.
That's it. I don't feel comfortable sharing any of the, like, conflicts or learning things that, I don't know, if it may be too personal, but there's things that you could share that other people could learn from, how to deal with difficult, you know, situations where the race, class, gender stuff comes up.
Keep talking. Keep working at it. Yeah.
And educate yourself about it, too. I'd say, like, a lot of it is that. I mean, it's an interesting question because it is, and why I think we're, like, a little, like, whew, because it's hard, and it's still coming up, and it's still figuring out, like, how, like, I guess answering with some more questions, like, in a self-directed thing, how do you do this, and how do you create, like, containers for it, you know? Like, that's really, like, some of my biggest questions, like, do you need someone who's outside of it? And what does that even mean to sort of hold the space? Or can we do that for each other without letting, you know, our own biases or like, and keep boundaries? Like, how do we do that? So advice would be, like, anything like this that you're going into, like, get ready for that, like, anticipate that and acknowledge that is all those things are going to be there, and think about it and be really thoughtful about it and be aware of those intentions. And then also is, I think there's something in when you're in these situations is, like, give grace to each other, like, when you see, like, checking your own reactions always, but just also if you're feel like you're failing at it, just, like, give each other some grace, because it's hard and we come in with so much. And so just, like, allow each other some space to grow also, even if that what someone's doing is really hurting you, just, like, trying to see what maybe they're trying to do also. And that's, like, part of it. And yourself, like, because so much too, I think, has been, like, the harshness of our own expectations. I think that's played a big part, actually, in our group, like, the expectations we've had of this trip and what it is and what it means to work hard or what it means to have purpose in life. Like, all of these things too are what we bring with us, and our relationships to our bodies and all that stuff, to be a little more gentle with ourselves and checking those expectations and
yeah
a little self-love.
Yeah. Maybe I can ask you a few questions about the biking part of it.
Sure.
So you're performing as you go along. Can you say something about the stage or the set, or how are you carrying all this stuff, and how has that evolved over the trip?
Sure. I mean, at this point it feels almost like the stuff of legends, even though it was, like, only less than 3 months ago. But in this time when we were preparing to leave, there was always this intention of having a really light, minimal set. But I think even that idea was not quite something that we pushed far enough or really were able to look at. And much like Jenny mentioned, so much was happening all at once. People were coming together for the project. We were building the sets. We were doing fundraising. We were finishing the script. We were standing the play up. We were preparing to say goodbye to our lives for 3+ months of time, and creatively we ended up kind of taking on more than we meant to. And then we had one trailer, and then, well, if you have one trailer and one person's going to be driving a trailer, why not another trailer? And then why not distribute the weight more and have three trailers? And we ended up, we had a piece of the set that was actually built out of the trailer. So while that was innovative, it also meant that we couldn't get rid of the trailer. Mm-hmm. And we had this lovely kitchen with these coolers, and very, very quickly discovered within days that this was just not realistic to get us to our shows in time. We just couldn't get the miles done. And it wasn't about will, and it wasn't about strength. It was just, we were really bumping up against a limitation.
And then we were about to go across the desert, and we were already, like, planning, like, how are we going to do this? We're going to have to wake up at 2 a.m. and, you know, beat the heat. And then, like, pulling these trailers was like, we won't survive this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And also, I would also note that things are all interconnected. So the personal dynamics that were happening we're all getting really exacerbated by the stress of this sort of impossible Herculean physical task.
Time.
And always time, always just like not enough time. And so the project has ended up kind of going in stages. We realized this was not realistic. We had to get a U-Haul to make it to our show in Los Angeles. And then from Los Angeles, actually all the way through up until Denver, we had to rely on friends and family to drive these just huge trailers to our show because we didn't have enough time to really reimagine what we were doing while we were doing it. Mm-hmm. But then we decided to have this week in Denver to really rethink everything. And we did that by deciding we had allotted 2 weeks to bike through Kansas. And so instead we decided to stay a week in Denver and hitchhike through half of Kansas, mm-hmm. which is fine. It was the best state we could have done that through. Yeah. And in Denver, I revamped a bunch of the script. We shipped a ton of our personal belongings back home or got rid of them. We revamped the set to make it something that we actually could carry on our bicycles, and we just worked the play so much more and found so much more depth and nuances in these moments, and then took off again, granted hitchhiking, but you know, by the time we got to Kansas City, the project was much more what we had envisioned it to be. But it took us that whole way of stumbling and bumbling and relying on all these people and sort of knowing that it wasn't what we wanted it to be, but not quite knowing how to figure it out. And slowly various shipments of things back home or things we're getting rid of and dropping off at Goodwill and, you know, like
seeing
all
what you don't need. Sometimes you don't know until you're there and you don't need it.
Yeah. How do 7 people with all their stuff hitchhike through Kansas with bikes and everything?
It's its own project. I'm kind of liking that, but I'm an unfair whatever because I keep having like insanely good luck. We did this thing where we split up into groups, or teams. In Kansas, we just like basically cased this like parking lot truck stop, you know, and you just like kind of keep your eye out for the pickup trucks or for the sometimes minivans or see a U-Haul or and just approaching them. And the thing is, with our bikes, it lends us some legitimacy and like trustworthy, and we look like we've got something going on. We're not just hitchhiking with no plan and who are these random people. I don't know, I would just go up to someone and sort of be like, hey, which way are you headed? We're trying to make our way across, and this is what we do. John has this giant, he has an extra cycle, and so his is like, we always have to find sort of like special vehicles that can take his, but it's a kind of like another part of this project.
I just wanted to encourage Jenny to tell the story. We did a little bit of hitchhiking in Canada. It's very stressful, this anxiety of feeling like you're not going to get a ride, and what are you going to do, and what if we can't make it to the show? But when you finally do get into a car with someone, you have this time and this space to really take a break from this little microcosm that we're in and just hear about someone else's life, which is so lovely. And Jenny just had a really fun experience hitchhiking last time.
So in Canada, so it was like our second round of hitchhiking. And again, the first time I had been like the first one to like find a ride, and it was like, okay, sorry guys.
You said by yourself. The first time you weren't
No, it was with someone. Okay. It was me and Ren, and we had the weirdest, like easiest, it was like strangely easy, and everyone else had struggled so hard, and we're like, hey, sorry. And then this time it was like, I literally like looked at a person, he came out and was like, what are you guys doing? I was eyeing his minivan, and I was like, minivan? I don't know. I started smiling at him, and he came out, and he's like, where are you guys going? What are you guys doing? Where are you going? And I told him, I said, we're actually looking for a ride. We're going to Niagara Falls. And he was like, oh, well, I was just coming to this truck stop to hang out because I was picking up my girlfriend in London at 5, but I can do this instead. And I'm like, you can take this. And it was with John. He's got the giant bike. So it was like, all right. And so we get in the car, and he had been camping in Northern Ontario for like, he had sort of left his life and was just like living out of his van. He was someone who was sort of existing out of time mm-hmm. as well, you know, and in this whole other system. So he's like, well, this is just an adventure for me, and I'm curious about what you guys are doing. So we went with him, we put our stuff in the car, and John's like kind of huddled in the, you know, in between the stuff and the driver's seat. And then we switched halfway. And so we're on our way, and he hunts and he fishes and stuff. And so somehow we got in the conversation where I was like, yeah, I've only shot a gun once in my life. He's like, oh, do you want to shoot one now? And I'm like, okay. And then part of me is like, is this the moment where we get murdered? And then I was like, well, me and John look at each other and we're like, all right. And so, well, you only live once. So we like get out. So we like go below with like this like country roadside. And he's like, okay, just like two shots each. And then we'll get in the car and go. So John like takes it into the ground, you know, he's like, shoot into the ground. It was like a field of thistle. And so John takes his two shots, and then like I come and they load me up, and it's like, huh! And then he's like, all right, get in the car. And we see like some people down the road sort of like checking out, and we like make a fast getaway. And then we get to Niagara, and we were the first ones ahead, and I knew it was going to rain that night, and we had planned to meet in this park, but there was no pavilion. We like to seek out these pavilions and parks, yeah, so we, in case it rains, because all of our flies leak. And so I was like, oh, we need a motel, but we can't really afford that right now. And this guy was like, oh, you know, like, first he's like, let's go to the casino. You can always win $30 gambling. And that was before the motel thing. And so we go in there, and he's like, I watch him. He's like, there's like a formula, and you just gotta stay cool. You gotta stay cool. And he's like, wins $30 or $25, and he just hands it to me. And like, all right, we'll have some dinner on this. And then I'm talking about the motel, and he's like, well, I think I could try and win $100, and that'll pay for the motel. And I'm like, are you sure? Are you comfortable with that? And he's like, yeah. He's like, I'll either give it to you or I'll win it. And we're like, what? Who are you? Why? Like, we find that people like really want to take care of us. People are like really generous with us. And I was like, well, let's try to win it then. I don't know. So like, we go in there, and within a half an hour, I'm like emailing the others, like trying to tell them the plan, what's going on. I come back in, and John had been with him, and he's like, oh, I did it. And he had won $100 playing roulette. So we paid for our hotel room that night with it. So, and it made for a good story.
Wow.
Cool. And you've been listening to Out There. And this has been an interview with the Agile Rascals. That specific interview is with Dara Silverman and Jenny Hipshire, two of the seven of the troupe that are performing at the Hungry Ghosts this evening at 8. Dwayne, what do you got over there?
No, you hit me up.
Well, no. Wait.
What?
You're listening to Valley Free Radio.
103.3 WXOJ, Valley Free Radio.
And there's some events coming up that Dwayne's going to mention.
Yep, we got a pipeline processions. I guess it's been going on for a while, but there's one Saturday, August 29th, in Deerfield at the Woman Hill Retreat Center, 102 Keats Street. Okay. See, introduction to nonviolent direct action from 3 to 5. Potluck dinner.
I know you like that.
5 to 6. And a pipeline procession from 6 to 8. For more details, visit www.childrenofthewild.org, I think.
All right.
Childrenofthewild.org.
Thanks, Dwayne. Also want to take this time to mention a few other shows on Valley Free Radio. Democracy Now! Follows this one up at 5 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock on Wednesdays is Alternatively Speaking with Dr. Saskia Cote. I'm going to play another clip from this week. This is an interview with Ben Ross. I had interviewed him.
Go Ben.
I had interviewed him a few weeks ago when CSO workers went on strike. I believe that was around July 22nd, 23rd, 24th. And so I just asked him how things are going.
So one thing I meant by that question, I guess, was how you felt. How did you feel going back to work on Monday after having that strike?
Yeah. I felt empowered. You know, I basically felt like a lot of my coworkers had shown up and given voice to our deep belief in the work that we do and in the importance of this work for our community, our clients especially, and basically like valuing care for vulnerable people in our society.
Do you want to talk about some of those ways that CSO workers are trying to defend their rights?
Yeah, at this point, you know, we've got an effort to get various city councils to pass resolutions expressing their support for the workers of CSO mm-hmm. to receive adequate pay and benefits.
Yes, yeah, so the Northampton City Council last Thursday, what happened there?
They voted unanimously in favor of the CSO workers getting an adequate resolution to the contract as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. And why are city councils taking up this issue?
Well, it's a taxpayer-funded agency, so having some equitable distribution of income with taxpayer money is a public interest. So, you know, our representatives are, that's part of their work is to keep track of that and make sure that our money is being spent to provide the best services possible to the community. It's unequal in a number of ways. CSO is making a profit at this point, so this, how are they deciding to spend that? And they keep giving themselves, the upper management keeps giving themselves raises every year to the point that Karen Jeffers now, you know, her total salary plus benefits is $225,000 a year. And just the disparity between that and what the average worker there is making is huge.
So the Northampton City Council passed this resolution Thursday. What other city councils are you talking with?
We're going to go to, or, you know, I and workers who live in Greenfield and anyone else who's concerned is going to go to the Greenfield City Council meeting, which is Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And we're going to present this to the Springfield City Council as well, and the Athol City Council.
These are all places that CSO has branches or what?
Yes, yeah. So that's, you know, one next step is to get help from state, you know, from local representatives and state representatives we're reaching out to as well.
Has there been any response from CSO about the Northampton City Council passing this resolution?
There was a response. There was an email from a CSO administrator to a city councilor expressing an intense dislike of this unanimous resolution. And that email got out. You know, it's clear that they're not happy. This vote was, you know, went through and was unanimous and was validating our concern.
It's going to be called up for again, did you say?
It's going to be called up again on September 3rd. So, you know, the Northampton City Council has agreed to review it, call it up for a vote again. And it'll be sort of a matter of, does the community show up and is there a sense of really supporting the city council's original decision to mm-hmm. to vote in support of the workers?
Mm-hmm. That's on Thursday, September 3rd.
Yes, yes.
Can you just tell me about this postcard campaign?
Yeah, so these postcards are going to the CSO board of directors, and it's just expressing what it's like to try to live on the wages that we are making right now, why this work is so important to our community, which we know they value deeply and that they have a lot of awareness of that. And we're just making our voice heard why we're doing this so that we're not portrayed as a little band of disgruntled employees, which is how we're being portrayed often. And we want to voice that there are a lot of people who are concerned about this, CSO employees and people in the community who are finding out the economics of what's going on and how that affects the stress level of the workers and the quality of the services that we can then provide.
It seems to me like the bottom line is your love for your clients and your desire to be able to do this work in a healthy, sustainable way.
Yes. Us feeling supported matters a lot in the level of support we can give to people who really, really need it and who we really deeply care about.
That was an interview with Ben Ross, who works for CSO and has been involved in trying to get the CSO employees some better working conditions. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Also, Dwayne Rainey is here.
In person.
Before I go to the interview with Julia Reisman from the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways, Dwayne, do you have another announcement you're excited to share?
Excited?
You just can't wait.
August Artists Digital Photography Class Reception at the Northampton Senior Center. Now, this is tomorrow night. No, not tomorrow night. They wouldn't be up that late. Excuse me. You are invited to Northampton Senior Center on Thursday, August 20th at 1 p.m. for the August Artist Reception showing the world through the photographer's eyes. Subjects range from tiny bugs to the king of beasts. Locations range from the African plains to the benches of downtown Northampton. Every photograph is a work of art that details one moment in time as witnessed by these skilled amateurs. That just gives me a picture in my head.
Thanks, Dwayne. Speaking of art, I'm going to play this little clip that I recorded on Friday of myself.
Of yourself?
The second Friday of the month is Arts Night Out in downtown Northampton. So first I went to my friend Anna Bayless Arthur's art display in the APE Gallery and looked at her paintings and pencil drawings. And then I took a ride to Haydenville on the rail trail through Leeds. And when you take the rail trail to the end past Mulberry Street in Leeds, about where it turns into crushed stone, along the path are all these driftwood sculptures. Well, they're arrangements of driftwood and stone, glass bottles, roots, trees, tin cans. And when you look at them, they look like creatures. Like here's one that looks like a couple of giraffes with their necks extended over a stockade fence. And there's a whole row of animals peeking over the fence. And there's a ballerina up against the signpost. A driftwood ballerina, a root ballerina. There's birds and snakes. And that looks like horse skull, even though it's wood. And here's a rusty metal wash tub that looks like livestock are drinking out of it. And a seal, a stone seal. It's an evolving project by people who live or walk on the path around here. I think it was started by Jim Myers. He and his grandson, who was about 5 at the time, I think, would go on walks along the creek and in the woods and pull up items that were interesting. And then neighbors started joining in on the effort. And now it's like a real arts walk in the woods. And sometimes there's messages written with sticks that say things like, think. Or someone might change it to say, thanks. Thanks, Leeds neighbors. There's also a man out here who, I see him around, I've met him on the path before, with his little bike and trailer full of stuff. On my way out here, around Look Park, he was pulled over, and he called on me to stop, so I did, and he gave me a tomato and a zucchini. And then just now, on my way back from Haydenville, he was in the woods on his way to his place for the night, and he hollered at me to stop again, and then he gave me a can of V8 and a can of cranberry jelly. They're clearing the path for the rail trail extension towards Haydenville and Williamsburg. Last week I noticed the survey markers, and then today they started cutting down little trees on the edge to widen it adequately.
All right, so the next thing I have is the interview with Julia Reisman from the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways.
I'm Julia Reisman.
And what's your connection with FNTG?
I used to be vice president of the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways, and now I'm just a great supporter of it.
Mm-hmm. And so you and your husband Nick started it together, right?
Yeah, we moved here about 11, 12 years ago, new to Northampton, and trying to find our way around. And we started to bicycle and walk and just learn the area. We met Greg Delapena, who was doing these trail rides where he was introducing people to the trails. And that's when we really got this idea that having a bicycle group, a trail group for Northampton, focused on Northampton, advocating for Northampton would be incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. He was the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any challenges in getting it started, or how did you like recruit people, or what did you do at first?
So creating a 501c3 nonprofit, right? Creating that structure of allowing people to make charitable donations to do good is not as hard as you might think. It's you have to submit paperwork, and you have to create a structure, and you have to form a board. But at the time, I was helping a friend of mine start a nonprofit to do work, human health and environmental health in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And Nick saw me doing that from my desk at home, mm-hmm. and he figured, well, you know, I could just take those papers of incorporation, and I could incorporate the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways. Mm-hmm. And so he did. And he, Nick Horton was at the time a professor at Smith and got some other Smith faculty to become officers. And mm-hmm. we had our first board meeting. It requires a quorum of 6 members of the organization. So we got our kids to show up so that we could make a quorum. And those early days, it was really about realizing that there was an incredible opportunity here in our community to make something happen. You got to start somewhere, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So that's what we did.
So what were some of the early goals and, I don't know, achievements or campaigns?
Right. I think we don't realize how important it is for our community to have extensive trails and that they don't just pop up one day. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of planning before they can be constructed. And before they can be even planned, they have to be designed. Mm-hmm. And before they can be designed, there needs to be money to pay for the design work. And this was the opportunity that the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways helped to fill, is raising money through people's memberships to collect money that we then donate to the city, that the city can then use to pay for the design work for future trails. And that is largely invisible, I think, mm-hmm. to realize that you have to do something so early on in the thinking process to make these beautiful trails appear in our community. Mm-hmm. So our first goal as an organization was to encourage people to join as members, to raise awareness that we have these trails in our community and mm-hmm. encourage people to use them, mm-hmm. get on their bikes, and to make our community more trail friendly. Mm-hmm. So those were our 3 goals. We started with a newsletter that we would print up and then like put on the trail under a rock and people would pick up on the way. We started with creating a map just so people could see where the trails are in mm-hmm. Northampton, because out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. And we tapped into the resources at Smith College. They have a map making laboratory and got volunteer students and staff to help us to create a city map that was clear and easy to understand. Mm-hmm. And over the past 10 years that we've been making the map, we've partnered now with East Hampton, so the trail map covers both. Mm-hmm. And the first time we printed it, we printed 4,000 copies. Mm-hmm. And this time, this winter, we're going to reprint it. And the demand is so great that mm-hmm. there'll be 70,000 copies made wow. and distributed.
Who's taking all these maps?
Who's taking all these maps? It's a great question. Have you seen on the trails there these kiosks? Mm-hmm. And on the kiosks is a map that shows you where you are on the trail and where you're going. Mm-hmm. And then there's a place where you can get the map. Mm-hmm. And then the maps are distributed to every new college student at UMass and Amherst and Smith and Hampshire College, so the college students can start to be using the trails, because mm-hmm. you can get from campus to campus using the trails. Mm-hmm. And increasingly, the Chamber of Commerce distributes them. The bike mm-hmm. shops distribute them.
Pedal People's been sending them to new customers who are new to the area.
Really? Yeah. And whether we realize it or not, now that the train stops in Northampton, Northampton mm-hmm. is a destination. People love to visit here. They love to come here and spend time here, eat here, enjoy the arts here. And now people are bringing their bicycles here. Mm-hmm. So the trail map has become something that people who want to get up and get around can use and just visit our communities. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love having it to give to guests who come in from out of town. Here, borrow a bike and take this map with you.
Right.
You can go anywhere.
Absolutely. And, I mean, we know we love our community, right? Mm-hmm. But increasingly other people are figuring out this is a mm-hmm. really wonderful place to mm-hmm. come and be and spend time.
I want to go back to something you said about raising money for the engineering part of mm-hmm. city bike or rail trail projects. Why doesn't that come from the regular city budget, or why is it helpful to have a separate group doing that fundraising?
Right. We're incredibly lucky in our city to have Wayne Fiden. He's our city planner. And he has a really, I think, progressive long-term view of how to connect our whole city and where everybody lives to a trail. Mm-hmm. But one person working alone, it can be really hard. There can be resistance. There's never enough money, right, to do everything we want to do. And when a when a group like the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways comes forth with a few thousand dollars, we're talking like $4,000, $5,000 a year, to say mm-hmm. what you're doing is important, it's not just one check. Mm-hmm. It's the check that represents all the members behind it who made contributions of $20 or $10 or $5 to become members uh-huh. that stand behind it. And it gives the weight of like collective agreement that this is a priority for the city and for mm-hmm. this community. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that really helps. We also write letters. So Wayne and the city is applying for grants, federal funding, community preservation funding, all the time to try to figure out ways that we can improve our community. And our letter from the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways with some of those grant applications can be tip the balance to mm-hmm. to proving that this community actually wants this work and it's important. And then it seems as though little things that we do, like helping the city to prioritize plowing the trails, mm-hmm. really does make a difference. So we have these wonderful trails. Many of the trails have been plowed for over a decade now to help mm-hmm. kids get to school mm-hmm. safely. So they're plowed all through the winter. But the past year, we've been having friends and members call and just say, hey, we really would like it plowed all the way to downtown. We'd like mm-hmm. to have it plowed so we can continue to commute to work. And those voices of many people coming mm-hmm. through an organization like the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways helps the city to prioritize where to put resources.
Mm-hmm. Do you know off the top of your head the statistic, Wayne's goal or the city's goal is to have like 2/3 of the population within 1 mile of a rail trail? Is that what it is, or do you know?
Yeah, it's very close to that. So imagine our city is a really interesting mix of rural areas, urban areas, really densely populated, and suburban areas. And as the city has looked at a long-term vision of how we're going to develop, mm-hmm. what kind of city do we want to become in the future, Wayne and you know, the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways has prioritized that the majority of people, 75% of the people, should have easy access to trails. And so future housing developments, we're going to make sure that that developer plans for a trail that gets people mm-hmm. from their housing development to a good road or access to a good trail mm-hmm. that's going to allow them to move around in our city to the places they want to go. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, our future city is going to be a leave-your-car-behind city, mm-hmm. you know? And that's the long-term vision, and we have to make that vision a reality through these little tiny steps, building a connection here, a trail there, an on-ramp onto the trail here, a signage there, so people mm-hmm. know that the trail is actually in that direction. Uh-huh. Go find it. Uh-huh. So sometimes it feels like to get to the big audacious goal of we can be a car-free city uh-huh. starts with these little tiny steps that we have to do.
Yeah. I'm going to have to ask, just because I know listeners will want to know, if you have any information about maintenance of the trails, what will take to get the trail maintained, like from Taco Bell down to downtown, or if you have any information about the tunnel.
Oh, the tunnel and maintenance. Those are really important, aren't they? You know, when you don't have a trail, you don't know that these things are really important. Then when you have the trail and you love it mm-hmm. and it's bumpy and there's a pothole and it's covered with weeds, it's like, it's not cool. It's just not cool. So this is a really interesting balance between what the community can do for the trail, what we want the city to do for the community to maintain the trail, right? Mm-hmm. We have to find, or we will continue to work to try to find that right balance. And one thing that's being tested right now is having people sponsor stretches of the trail that they would love and support and pick up the trash and maintain. Mm-hmm. There are sections DPW has been maintaining really beautifully for years, and then there's sections like around Taco Bell that are just like, really? Mm-hmm. This is so sad and pathetic to have so many weeds popping up and just taking over, and it yeah. feels kind of like neglected. We need to keep talking with DPW and with the city about what we want mm-hmm. and to say we'd like to have it mowed more than once a year.
Yeah.
It would be yeah. nice. You know, East Hampton does a beautiful job of maintaining their trails, but it's all volunteers, completely volunteers. They have a bigger volunteer base than we have here in Northampton. So I think looking forward, as a community, Northampton, we need to think about where we have human energy and interest in doing stuff for ourselves and where we want to work in partnership with the city to prioritize the city doing it for us. I don't know what the right answer is. We have to figure it out. You wanted to know about the tunnel?
Yeah, do you have anything to say about
it? It's coming. You know, and it was supposed to be here this summer. It's going to be here next summer.
Really?
Yeah. It's so hard to believe. So the project is designed. It won't take them long to build it. Yeah. They have this engineering where they just come in a day or two, boom, they put in the tunnel.
Yeah, because it's precast.
Pre-made, right? Everything about it is, like, good to go. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about why it got delayed?
I can't remember, though.
Oh, so the Amtrak train stopping in Northampton and building a permanent station for the Amtrak in Northampton, that project got coupled with the funding for the tunnel. And so construction got delayed because the funding out of Boston got these two projects together to save money in taxpayer dollars by getting them done both at the same time. So we have to wait a little longer for the tunnel. But it's coming.
There's still a hole in the fence. Wow. So when I moved here about 13 years ago, there was just the one trail in Northampton, like from Look Park down from Bridge Road down to Stop and Shop. And now, look at the map. Look at all these.
It's like 11 miles of trails in Northampton. Mm-hmm. All, you know, now you can get on the trail and you get to East Hampton. You can get to Amherst. You can get to the Williamsburg line. You can get to Southampton. It's crazy wonderful.
Almost the Williamsburg line. Not quite.
Not quite. But we're getting there. To think that happened only in 10 years is pretty remarkable.
Well, because it didn't happen in 10 years, right? There was a lot of stuff going on before that time. One of the things that Wayne and Craig make me aware of is getting these right-of-ways and property acquisitions. People just have to either move, die, or, you know, sell their land in some way. And that just takes years sometimes.
The original project you described when you came here was because a sewer line was put in by the city.
And the
from Look Park down to Stop and Shop. That's underneath that trail is a sewer line. And the reason why, if you start at Look Park, you can, like, almost glide all the way down to Stop and Shop is because of gravity. They needed the water for the sewer line to go down. And then they just put the trail right on top of it. And it's a beautiful trail through woods, and, like, it's lovely.
But it was also the trolley line before that.
It was the trolley line before that, right.
I'm just trying, imagining them putting a sewer line in that, like, packed, stuff that was packed down for the trolley, but they can do everything with heavy equipment.
Yep.
Wow. So, can you tell a little bit more about that process of becoming a trail?
So, that trail and the trail that goes from the river all the way to Amherst were some of the first rail-to-trail projects in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Really highly successful, and people really, really loved them. And I think that other communities picked up on the success of those projects and started to do their own trail development. Mm-hmm. And then since the founding of the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways, that stretch of trail has now expanded. So there's an extension to the Williamsburg line, you know, from Look Park that extended out that trail. And it's beautiful because it's, like, along the river. It's really pretty. There's the connection from Woodmont to Damon Road that's been built. And then, you know, even without the tunnel, we have that path from Taco Bell to Amherst. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first moved here, it was like to find that path, you had to go through the woods, you know, and it was a little swampy and scary looking. And now it's just really pretty. And it makes the trek, at least from my home to Amherst, feel really connected and smooth. Mm-hmm. The other piece that's been built is the extension of the Manhand to Southampton. So that connection to East Hampton. And well, a lot of people call that Giant Bridge, the Big Bridge.
Over Route 10.
Yeah, over Route 10. Sort of from a biking point of view, made East Hampton and North Hampton feel like sister cities, you know, yeah. Twin cities.
Yeah.
I mean, from my point of view, that's been really helpful. Did you hear that that project, that bridge, was a part of Obama's shovel-ready projects to help with the economic downturn? Did you hear that?
I remember.
So, you know, at the worst of the economic downturn, Obama released federal money for funds to get people to work. And there had to be projects that were shovel-ready, meaning the design work was all done, the engineering was all done. Only thing that needed was funding. Mm-hmm. And because Northampton had the design work already finished, we were quick to get that federal funding and get people to work on that bridge because of the work we did to support the city to make sure that those plans were ready to go. So we were really lucky. I mean, that was sort of like a timing thing. That whole connection, Northampton and East Hampton, might have been another decade away if we hadn't had that design work already done.
Wow. You've been listening to an interview with Julia Reisman from the Friends of Northampton Trails and Greenways on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM. And this is Out There. I'm Ruthie Woodring. I'm going to play a little bit more of the end of this interview, but stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5 o'clock.
And dance and sculpture. There was ideas of having, like, hidden playgrounds off the trails. Mm-hmm. There was ideas of showing kids how to do dirt biking, because a lot of kids don't know how to bike. They're not, you know, introduced to bikes.
She's talking about a brainstorming session we had about the future of the trails.
There were ideas of having a campsite off their trails. There was ideas like there's beautiful ideas that what we have to figure out is if there are people who want to volunteer, who want to make them happen. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, East Hampton's group, the Manhattan Rail Trail Group, they're a volunteer-driven organization. The city doesn't have the money to do what they're doing, like trail maintenance. As Northampton, we have to come together as a community and decide where do we want to put our volunteer energies. And if there are people out there who want to volunteer, we're looking for folks to step forward and share your dreams for the future, and then let's figure out how we can make more trails in our community, make our trails more appealing to people who've never used them. Mm-hmm. And let's figure out how to, you know, make the next 10 years even more awesome than this past 10 years.
Cool. So if people don't have time to volunteer, but they just want to support the friends, what can they do?
They can become members. They can get on their bikes. But check us out on the website, fntg.net, and explore around in there. And there's ways that you can contact or friend us on Facebook. Mm-hmm. There's like 700 people on the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. We often post trail groups, gatherings, wildflower looking on the trails, events that are happening up on Facebook and through our newsletter and also on our listserv.
Mm-hmm. How much is the membership?
It's whatever you want it to be, but I don't remember. It's like $20 for a family and, you know, $10 for a student.
Okay.
Not much. If you're new to the area, if you want to make friends, if you want to make a difference in your community, you should totally volunteer.
So Dwayne, Julia was talking about trail maintenance, and I asked her, you know, what would it take to maintain the stretch from Taco Bell to downtown? Well, that stretch has actually been very well maintained this year.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks to Dwayne.
And Battle People. We did that in the spring and probably do it again in the fall. And
Jack Finn, who's been mowing.
And lets me borrow his mower, which is great. And I hope to get the weed whacker maybe tonight. And just, I don't know, it's nice. And take a little pride, and like I haven't charged tolls or anything, but
you haven't even gotten your name up on the Adopt the Trail sign yet either.
Then I'll charge tolls.
So don't forget, the Agile Rascal Theater Troupe is performing at the Hungry Ghost this evening at 8:00. They've been biking for about 3 months from the West Coast doing shows along the way. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5:00. Anything else? We got a few more seconds. I could play some classical music.
This is WXOJ 103.3 FM, Valley Free Radio.